welcome back to the Missing More Murray podcast. Today we have a bonus episode, a conversation with John and Darren from the podcast Martinis and Murder. We were on their podcast about a month ago, and so it was really cool to reconnect with them. They're a lot of fun. So bonus episode, check it out, enjoy it, and thank you very much for listening. Welcome back to the Missing More Murray podcast. I'm Tim, here with Lance, and here today with the hosts of Martinis and Murder on Oxygen, John Thrasher and Darren Karp. What is up?
Hey, guys. How are you? This is Darren, by the way. Sometimes you can't tell that I'm a girl, but I am.
Yeah, for new listeners, you know, we need to make sure we differentiate who's Darren and who's John.
Correct.
Right. So I am John, and you're Darren.
Correct. How are you guys? Thanks so much for having us on. We're really excited to discuss all things Maura Murray today.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming on. And we're doing pretty well. I'm sensing a little allergy going over there though, right?
That's all John, not me. I'm perfect. So John, what's wrong with you today?
It's true. I might have to excuse myself to cough every few minutes. I'm dealing with some allergies. Thank you, Lance, for pointing that out. I really appreciate that.
I wanted to get it out of the way. I wanted to come out swinging and, put you on your heels a little bit so that I could have full control of this conversation.
And John, you're wearing high heels today, right?
And I am wearing high
heels.
So that
fits.
Perfect.
And yes. Makes two of us.
So we had a great chat with you guys on your podcast.
Yes.
That was a real fun conversation. So we wanted to have you guys on here to talk about Maura Murray, about the show, the Oxygen series, and a little bit about you guys and your podcast.
Two things we can definitely talk about.
Yeah.
Cool.
Whenever we had you guys on, you guys were here in the studio with us, and that was so much fun. Did you guys walk away from that episode enjoying your time on our show?
And or drunk, either.
A little bit of both. Yeah.
Might have been.
I was thrilled. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Might have been a little staggering. Not so much walking, but maybe tripping over your feet a little bit. It's not like you guys gave us a ton of alcohol, but
we had mudslides, right?
I think that's what we had. Yeah.
Yeah. There was like a dessert basically that we gave you. So it's fine.
Yeah,
it was like noon.
Yeah. For those who don't know, we should also mention on our podcast, Darren and I, it's called Martinis and Murder because
we do drink
on the episode. We discuss a murder every week. We had Tim and Lance on to obviously discuss Maura Murray. If anyone is into drinking and murders, you should check out our show.
Yes.
That's my shameless plug. I hope you guys don't mind.
No, not at all.
No, that's brilliant.
Actually, one of the things we wanted to ask you guys about was how you balance, your humor and keeping it light and having a drink, but also talking about really tragic cases.
I would actually say, you know, it's probably the number one question that John and I get about Martinis and Murder, because Martinis and Murder doesn't necessarily go together, or you wouldn't think that they would. And so, you know, we on our podcast make a note, and we really want, it's very important for us to honor the victims. A lot of places just talk about the murderers, and we really want to value what happened. Something serious went down. So it can be hard to kind of be joking about the light, you know, making something so lighthearted that isn't at all. So it's definitely a balance. We choose our moments for sure. It's not necessarily describing the details of the case, but something exterior, theories, you know, we can get kind of humor filled with that. And so it's definitely a balance that we struggle with every day.
Well, yeah. And also the thing that we always make sure people know is that we are fans of the genre first, and we aren't professionals. We're not investigators. We're not even really armchair detectives by any means.
Just fans.
Yeah, we're fans of the genre the way anyone else is. So we're here to kind of take those stories and tell them the way we would like to digest them. I know I've always been a huge fan of true crime podcasts. I love your guys' podcast. I think it's so informative, and you guys do such a great job of informing the audience and keeping, you know, the important stuff out there first, which I think is great. But, you know, I'm such a huge fan of all these different podcasts, but honestly, a lot of them are just so dark and and not miserable, but just kind of like, I always have this sense of like sadness after I'm done listening to them, but I do find myself wanting to listen to them. And so when we started this podcast, I thought, you know, Darren and I were kind of brainstorming and we said, what is a way that we can talk about this genre without it being so depressing? Because frankly, we knew we wanted to do this type of podcast, but we weren't going to be able to do that on our own with being dark and scary. Our personalities are not dark and scary.
Yeah, it wouldn't be authentic to us.
No.
We wanted to make it palpable
exactly. For
all ages, I think, to listen to these tragedies that happen. So that way
yeah. A
50-year-old mom could listen with her 12-year-old daughter and it's not, oh my God, you know,
as
they're
jarring.
Talking. Right.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
as jarring. And it's also a way to make it a little bit more accessible to the people.
And a lot of the stories that we cover have an element of like, what the hell to them, you know? So there's always some kind of weird thing that regardless of the scenario, you're going to probably laugh about.
Right.
And we're also never disrespectful to the victims. If we're laughing or carrying on, it's usually about us.
Yeah,
it's either us or something absolutely stupid that the killer has done. And we have no sympathy whatsoever for the killer.
We always try and relate to a case,
right.
even though
yeah.
you and I have never been murdered. As far as,
as far as I know, I've never been murdered. I could be a ghost.
So that can always, that adds a little humor because we don't relate to these cases at
right.
all, but we always try and find a link.
Let me flip it on your guys' heads here and say, how do you guys approach your show in terms of like the tone and all that stuff?
We've never been this serious in any aspect of our lives. I think it's safe to say.
It really was a bit of a challenge when we started doing the podcast because we wanted to be informative. We wanted to give the best presentation of the case to the listeners. And in the beginning, when you listen to it, you can definitely tell, at least when I listened to myself, just how sort of stiff I sounded.
Right.
Like my voice was really stressed. And it was because I was trying so hard to be serious and say the right thing. Once we were able to do sponsor reads and loosen up a little bit and work that in with the show, we actually had some people email us or contact us on Twitter and say that it's a nice break from the the seriousness of the episode when you have, you know, just a little bit of goofing off.
Sure.
And it's okay. And with your podcast, what I was going to say when you guys were talking about this is if you mentioned like a 50-year-old mom could listen to it, and I picture a 50-year-old mom listening to it and laughing in spite of herself.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because you're making fun of yourselves and it's like, oh, and it's that necessary moment of I'm a full person. I can laugh,
yeah.
but I can also feel that the sense of, you know, kind of hopelessness and dread, but hey, if they say something funny, I'm going to laugh.
I mean, my takeaway here is that what you're saying is pay Lance money,
yeah.
and he will do whatever you need
He'll
to do.
He'll show some personality.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
okay.
He's not just like a stick in the mud. He's got
yeah.
something to offer people.
All right.
I wasn't sure if I laid that on too thick or
no,
not.
No, no,
I'm
no.
glad you guys
It's definitely
glad you guys read into
the
that.
The humor for us has definitely, I think, gotten easier over the time. That was definitely
sure.
our main concern. And now I think any critiques that we get isn't actually about the humor. It's sometimes if we say something wrong, one of the things, you know, we would say prostitute
yeah.
as opposed to sex worker. Now, we didn't mean prostitute in any sort of
negative.
Pejorative way.
Yeah.
We weren't shaming anybody, but the proper terminology is sex worker. And so our audience really gives us that feedback
mm-hmm.
just to make us more informed and better at telling these stories. It actually has less to do with the humor, which is shocking. They seem to really respond to it, I would say.
Yeah.
Right. That's a good one. Yeah. Good note. Yeah. We had called Maura a girl, you know, it's a 21-year-old
right.
girl, and we got killed for that
oh, yeah.
with emails
oh, yeah.
and tweets. So that was the last time we made that naive mistake. And so obviously Maura is a woman and was a woman
right.
When she went missing.
Right.
I don't even address anyone in like my day-to-day life as a girl anymore because of
no,
that
it's
comment
true.
Because
oh, yeah.
I looked at it and I thought to myself, wow, that is just sort of an ignorant thing to say.
No, and
yeah.
it's funny, not to kind of derail here, a personal anecdote though is I found myself catching other people that I know talking about their relationships and being like, oh, this girl I like, and I'm like, actually, she's like 27.
I hope she's a woman.
And she's a woman,
yeah.
and hopefully it's not a girl. And I remember catching myself thinking that and then being like, do I say girl sometimes? I think we're just so used to that just as a culture, you know, growing up,
yeah.
I'm sure. But yeah,
girl
of course.
Girl more than boy to me. Girl
right.
sounds just
it does
so
sound
juvenile, but boy, like boys are gross. You
okay,
know what I mean?
Fair
yeah.
enough,
yeah, yeah,
Darren.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thanks, Darren.
My sister, she's 38 and she still says kid. She likes a guy. She's like, oh, I like this kid.
I think that's
and you know,
hilarious.
He's like 40, that's but amazing. She still calls him kid. Yeah.
That's a power move right there on her part. I'm taking that. Oh, this kid? Oh, this kid?
Yeah, suburban Boston.
Yeah, yep. I love it.
Yeah, that's definitely a New England thing, especially a Boston or Medford yeah. thing. Like,
I
everybody's kid.
I'm using that.
Or guy. Tough kid. Tough guy.
So, before we get into more, I'm just curious how your guys' live show went at Caroline's.
Oh, thanks for asking.
From what I can remember, it seemed great because I had three martinis in an hour. I was in rare form.
I think it might have been four. Could it have been four?
It was possible. John did a little singing that we couldn't put in our audio recording of it because the lawyers wouldn't let us use any music.
Yeah, we can't distribute me singing, apparently.
But he got up,
good.
He had a solo, and it was breathtaking, I will say.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
What song?
It was the story, how this all unfolded, and you guys can listen to this. It's actually one of the episodes on our podcast,
yes.
If anybody listening wants to check it out. But yeah, we did this live show, and Darren was talking about how she feels more sympathy for the animals and that Sarah McLachlan
Arms of an Angel. You know, it's like Animal
commercial.
Rescue.
Yeah, Animal Rescue. And as she was kind of telling the story, I kind of in the background, I'm just singing along to the song, and then finally she stopped, and I kind of stood up, and I took the microphone, and I had a moment. Let me have my moment.
It was really fun, though. The energy was so different. It was so nice having people in the room. We actually played games, which were really fun.
Yeah.
You know, what kills more people per year, and that was actually very surprising, I think.
Yeah. Icicles or roller coasters? Tune in.
Can we play that game? That's a good game.
Let me see if I can pull it up.
If we can pull it up, I will say I remember one of them. What kills more people per year, ants or spiders?
Do you know this one, Darren?
I know it because I'm absolutely terrified of spiders. So
the side note is that Darren wants to be a game show host, so you've just really clicked into what she loves.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, we're just going to play games this whole time now. That's my dream. So yeah, ants or spiders.
I'll go with B, spiders, yeah.
I'm going to go with ants. I feel like this is not a trick question, but I feel like there's probably more ants in the world.
And
therefore more opportunity.
More terrified of spiders than ants, but ants actually kill more people per year.
I do, and I brought up the in fact, ants kill about 30 people per year, whereas spiders 6.5. Don't know where that 0.5 comes from.
Don't know how you kill half a person, but even talking about it makes me feel half dead.
Do you guys want to play a couple more while we're on it?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go to. Okay, here's a good one: champagne corks or icicles.
I'll go with champagne corks.
All right, we're locking Tim with champagne corks. Lance?
I'm going to go with champagne corks as well. I feel like maybe people get injured by icicles, but not killed.
The answer is indeed champagne corks.
Woo! You get a cork!
I know.
You get a cork!
You're going to get an oxygen notebook, which we have here. Champagne corks kill almost 24 people every year. Falling icicles kill 15 people per year, which is disturbing.
Yep.
They probably blind a lot more people as well, but that's an entirely different quiz.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to do one more while we have them up?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way this is going.
Just play games the whole time.
Okay. Selfies or lightning? Selfies or lightning?
Definitely selfies. Yes. Definitely.
Definitely selfies.
You guys are both
that
correct.
That is correct.
127 people per year. Lightning kills 31, which is actually a lot more than I was expecting.
And one thing we didn't put in our quiz that we both kind of found interesting, we probably said it at the end, is that I think 2,500 people a year, left-handed people, die by using right-handed products.
Oh, my God.
Which is crazy.
That is crazy.
The world is geared towards a righty. And, over 2,000 people die per year if you're a lefty.
That's amazing. Yeah.
All right, one more just because this is so fun.
Is that like slicing open an avocado with like a right-handed
knife
or something?
Exactly, stick driving maybe, you know, or something like that.
Oh, my God. All right, here's one last one.
How did you even come up with that statistic?
Look, don't ask us of where we get our research.
Weird guess statistics. That's what you Google, and then you just peruse the internet all day and get paid for it. It's wonderful.
It's amazing. All right, last one here. Vending machines or roller coasters?
Vending machines.
I gotta go with Tim on it, too. I pictured someone's feet sticking out from the bottom of a toppled vending machine.
You guys are good. Yeah. It is vending machines. They usually collapse on top of people. How many people, John?
That's 13 per year,
Yeah.
whereas roller coasters kill 4.
damn, people really want to get their damn Kit Kats out of those things. You
I
have
know.
To like risk
and
their
I would risk my life for like a, you know, whatchamacallit.
A Cheez-It? Yes, I would as
yeah,
well.
Exactly.
Good job. You guys killed it.
Yeah, we'll have to send you like oxygen pens and swag just for fun. Yeah.
Thanks. So how long do you guys research for a typical episode of Martinis and Murder?
I would say it takes about a week of full research. You know, the research then needs to be condensed down into a script because there's a lot of details. And John can sort of speak to this specifically because he's the one that parses it down. You know, there's a lot of details there that are great for color and great for our story, but just time-consuming-wise, we don't need to say everything. And so John really takes all the research that we get and really condenses it into what we could say for a show.
Yeah, we have someone that does a lot of our research for us. And then, you know, our Matt the Bartender, who is a famous character on our show, does
infamous
a lot.
Infamous character.
Yeah, infamous. He does a lot of the research. And then basically we have to run it through a process to make sure that it's factual. Because what I think a lot of podcasts that I listen to get away with that we can't, frankly, is... you know, a lot of hyperbole and conjecture. And we want to make sure that we're as authentic and true to the facts of the story as we can be. That's why you don't really hear us hypothesizing too much on our show, because we kind of want to take the facts and tell the story more so than come up with crazy theories. I mean, anybody can do that. Anybody can say anything. So to us, and frankly, to us, a lot of these murders are so powerful and disturbing and emotional that you don't need to be hypothesizing that much. You know, you don't have to worry about the mind of a killer. There's so much to learn from each individual story as it is.
We also definitely like leaving it open to the audience. Certainly any cold cases, you know, tweet us your theories. What do you think happened? Yeah. We'll definitely say popular theories out there. It's a lot easier for John and I to actually say our honest opinion about just our initial findings when everyone's in jail or people are dead or the case has been closed, just because...
right.
You know, that we're not going to offend anyone by doing that. But we always have a lawyer on the line to make sure that what we're saying is 100% accurate.
Great.
Yeah, that's smart. Speaking of Matt, is he there?
Matt is not
in the
room.
Doghouse. Yeah.
Oh,
well,
what happened?
Well, he was getting a little too famous. We did launch an Instagram account called Matt_the_bartender.
He gets followers more than us now.
Way more than us.
So we don't really want that.
Yeah.
Right, John?
Well, frankly, he's probably researching this week's episode.
That's what he says he's doing.
That's what he says he's doing. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Hopefully he's doing his goddamn job. Sure.
Now, but before we get to Maura, I have one question that I'm dying to know from Darren. So Andy Cohen is your boss, right? You work for him?
Yeah, I like to think that he works for me, but yes, hopefully he won't be listening and then get mad at me. But yes, I'm his one and only. I'm his right hand or left hand, depending on what he's doing.
Nice.
Yes.
I guess what I want to know is did you have anything to do with getting him the @Andy Twitter handle? Because that's amazing.
I did, actually, because it used to be @BravoAndy, which is what his Instagram was. And then, you know, he wanted it to just, you know, I think because he was doing other stuff outside of Bravo. He's got a serious radio channel. He goes on tour with Anderson Cooper, blah, 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 blah. He wanted it to be @Andy. And so we had to work some negotiations out that I was heavily involved in order to get it. But it didn't take long. Usually people want to please such an awesome guy. And so it didn't take too much, but it definitely cost a little bit.
Very cool. Okay. Yeah, I was just curious because I saw that and I was just kind of blown away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I was on Twitter like pretty early, but I really wanted @Beyoncé for myself as a huge Beyoncé fan. And unfortunately, some other comedian had it. So
I wonder if @Darren exists. Spelled my way.
Yeah.
I like
@Tim
mine
was
anyway.
Taken
but
when I signed up.
Oh.
@Tim was taken, yeah. Lance, we were actually talking about Lance's name before we started the show because Lance sent his Skype name to us so we could all talk. And I was like, really, Lance? You included your very complicated last name?
Yeah,
your
19-vowel last name. Thank you for that. We were expecting it to be like Valley Girl 101, and instead we got your whole name. We were... very upset.
I was reading
here.
It off and I was like, I'm just going to go letter by letter. Grace, can you please add this? It's R.
She's like, so there's 19 E's in his last name. I'm like, that's correct. We counted it. There's 19. Yep.
This is all love, Lance, by the way.
It's pronounced Smith, too, which
yeah,
is
that's
just a little foreshadowing that nothing in dealing with me is easy.
Yes.
Even my Twitter. I mean, my Skype is
things that your fans
Tim's
may
nodding his head right now.
Yeah,
yeah,
things
exactly.
The fans and listeners may not have known.
For sure,
there's
for
always
sure.
There's always some caveat.
Exactly.
So let's talk about this series, The Disappearance of Maura Murray. So what are you guys' thoughts so far? We're right before the finale.
You guys caught up on it?
Yeah.
Honestly, it makes my blood boil. Like, anytime I watch a series, especially like this, where there's just so many unanswered questions, and mm-hmm. every episode you just feel like there's going to be a reveal, and we got to tell the authorities this. I get excited. My adrenaline is absolutely rushing, and I just consume every single piece of information I'm given.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. You know, we have Oxygen is crime all the time now, so we have so many different true crime shows, and all of them are, and I'm not just saying this because I work here, I'm a fan of the show. Genre. All of them are so compelling. The disappearance of Maura Murray was like another level, though, because there are so many unanswered questions to this case, and to see it kind of unwind on TV is a very different experience than just like a podcast or just diving into like a Reddit thread.
Right.
So for me, I really, really enjoyed this series, and trying to come up with ideas. You know, I think Darren and I had sent Darren some of the episodes, and we raced through the first like four episodes here at Oxygen instantly, and we were like, what do you think happened? Do you think that she's this? Do you think she's alive in Canada? So we absolutely loved it, and I know you guys obviously are on the show, so how has that been for you guys, like going from podcast to TV?
It was a little nerve-wracking the first week that it premiered. That was incredibly nerve-wracking. Actually, it's nerve-wracking every single week.
Yeah,
I don't know what
definitely.
I'm saying. Like, we got used to it. Like, for some reason, we got used to it.
Well, nerve-wracking in what way? Sorry to interrupt.
Like, watching yourselves back or just having, like, a camera light on you?
No. I think I thought at first I would feel uncomfortable watching us, but I started to feel more anxious about knowing how many hundreds of thousands of people were also watching us.
Sure.
And that was... You know, my stomach's getting butterflies right now thinking about it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Lance, calm
and just
down.
Didn't want to say
okay.
anything too dumb, you know. Like
have a cocktail. Yeah.
It's pretty easy to do. I mean, we make mistakes every week on our podcast. So
I was just going
to
say
welcome
so
to our
do
lives.
We.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What I really liked about the last, as John said, we raced through the first four, and we just recently actually finished the series together, was how you guys, the interesting thing about this case as opposed to other things that John and I have actually covered on Martinis and Murder is that there's probably 8 plausible good theories about what happened to her, as opposed to just, is it this or is it this? And certainly the entire 6-episode run, but the last two really dive into what could be possible and what isn't. And that was just fascinating, because I think what you don't know is just as important about what you do, and being able to answer those questions is so valuable, even if it doesn't give you, you know, the answer you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think I want to use that from now on. What you don't know is almost as valuable as what you do know. We kind of say that a little bit when we say, you know, in order to find something to be a fact, you have to eliminate all of the other red herrings and all of those details that are just kind of floating out there, all the noise. And once you eliminate that, then you have this fact. But I like the more succinct version you just said.
I'm not even drunk, guys.
Not yet.
So what do you think happened at this point? So I guess you've seen the finale. So we haven't seen the finale yet. Our audience hasn't seen it yet. Unless they're listening to it after they've seen it, obviously. But is there anything you guys can share about the finale?
I think nothing
will blow your minds. I can say that.
I think that's the main thing, is I think the finale will be of great interest. Obviously, we can't say anything about what happens in the finale, but we have seen it, and it's very, very interesting. I hate to be so vague about it, but I will say
it had the most adrenaline rush for me.
That's a good way to put
it. Wrapping everything up in a nice little bow. I mean, it's super informative.
Yes.
I will say that.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys this. I'm curious. What did you leave the show whenever you were finished filming? Did you leave with any more clues or information that maybe you didn't have before that kind of put you down a different path, perchance, of your investigation?
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of the things that the show uncovered really kind of leads you in a direction. And I think personally, it definitely led me in a direction. You know, they rule out the or they basically rule out Maura having been pregnant, I would say, pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
they rule out the Butson's sighting, which is a pretty popular theory if you believe Maura
That's
ran
true,
away.
Yeah.
And then in episode 5, they talked about the surrounding areas and the searches that they've done with dogs and with helicopters and people. And it really doesn't sound like Maura's within certainly a 5-mile radius or even further at this
yeah.
point.
Watching that footage of the dogs was absolutely incredible.
I don't feel bad at this point saying that it sounds, I'm almost certain that she got into a car right there where the dogs lost her scent.
Yeah, when
right.
you watch that and you see the dog sit down right there on the road,
mm-hmm.
every theory that I entertained in the past went right to the back seat. I saw the dog sit down and it became very obvious that she got picked up there. She got into some sort of moving vehicle because the scent ended so abruptly. And on top of what Tim just said about, you know, they ruled out the her going into the woods, the suicide angle, the pregnancy angle. They ruled out these angles. On top of that, every episode I'm more and more reassured that this case is in good hands with Oxygen and with the Texas crew. At the end of every episode, I think, damn, they're doing it so well, and they're presenting the information so clearly. Although, because it's a lot of information.
Yeah.
Well, like, there's just, like, so many theories.
Yeah, I mean, you asked us what we think happened, or at least I think that's what you
yeah.
asked us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and I think I agree, in my personal opinion, that something bad happened to her. And it does make me wonder. The thing that really has always stuck with me after all these months of being interested in this case so far is the car wreck. To me, that signals something that was A, out of her control, and B, it's very clear that, like, after you have a car wreck and you're in the middle of nowhere, you need to leave that scenario.
Right.
You need to get help in some capacity. So for me, I just keep replaying, like, yeah, and I go down this path of, like, okay, yeah, she did have to, she probably got into a car. And then, like you said in last week's episode, Darren, the dog stuff, it was just so very clearly obvious that
it was an abrupt end of
exactly,
the scent. Right?
Exactly. So for yeah. me, I concur. And part of me wonders if maybe, you know, she hit her head in that car wreck, got in a car and went unconscious. Somebody didn't know how to handle it.
Right.
You
didn't want to be framed for something
exactly.
or whatever.
But, some, mm-hmm. you know, again, this series isn't over on Oxygen. We have another episode still. So more details to come about even more of this stuff. But that's just kind of where I picture her getting into a car now.
And I do think, I mean, absolutely, I do think something bad happened to her. And I also think that she probably is, someone knows something out there that they haven't come forward with. I bet you there's,
in my opinion,
I think that there is a person or multiple people that know what happened, or there's a little detail that might crack something open that has yet to be, you know, delivered to anybody who could do something about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yep, totally agreed. And look at the window of time that we started off with, saying it's probably about
right.
7 minutes
mm-hmm.
for her to go missing. And if we are accurate, and this is if the dogs lose their scent right across from Butch Atwood's house. Butch Atwood had driven to his house, and the call was documented at 7:43.
Right.
So between him going into his house and talking to his wife and going back out to the bus, looking at the scene from the porch to the bus, sitting in his bus doing the paperwork, and not seeing her get picked up directly across the street. And for anyone who doesn't
yeah.
know the area, it is
right.
directly
it's visible
across the
for
street.
Sure.
It's right. 50 feet away. And now we're talking, if he didn't see anything, that 7 minutes is now down to maybe
right.
a minute.
Mm.
Maybe.
Yeah. Probably less. Yeah.
So it's so disturbing and annoying that we can't figure this out, you know?
Right. It's true. Someone knows something, right? So if she got into a car, say willingly, then and this person did something to her, overpowered her in some way, obviously that person is still out there. And if Maura you know, told the driver who picked her up to let her out somewhere, and she went off and committed suicide. You know, I know people still believe that's a possibility, and it's hard to say that it's not still a possibility, but still the problem is her body hasn't been found. So
where's the body?
Was she let out? Yeah, you know, where would she have been let out?
She's not killing herself and then burying herself in the snow, so you got to kind of wonder, you know, what's going on out there in those woods.
Isn't it? I'm curious what you guys think about how technology plays into this, because I imagine something like this happening now, there are so many cameras and everyone has a cell phone in their pocket. This was 2004. Like, I don't even think smartphones were really a thing at that point, or if they were, nobody had them.
Not as ubiquitous as exactly. They are now, for sure.
Do you guys think that technology, could this happen today in the same scenario, in your opinion?
I think in that area, it's probably more likely, because there's no cell phone service up there today.
Yeah.
And I highly doubt the Westmans would change their way and be more helpful, any more helpful than they were with Moore's accident. But you're right. Yeah. There's more police with cameras on their
body
uniforms
cams.
Now.
I was
maybe
just thinking that. Yes.
Maybe pictures are taken of the car with cell phones quicker and distributed at a more efficient rate. So
yeah,
and dash cams and things like that.
And she probably wouldn't have shut her phone off too, because we believe she shut her phone off on the trip up there.
Mm.
So we would have been sure what route she took if she hadn't. And today, most people don't do that. If they're driving, they don't shut their phone off. So we probably would have known where she was, why that missing hour is there. Maybe would have helped a little bit.
Another thing that frustrates me, sorry, not to go on, but this is the Missing Maura Murray podcast.
Yeah, please go on.
The other thing, too, that really frustrates me is that why shouldn't there be some sort of, like, I don't want to say legal, like a law or some kind of, you know, governmental mandate here. But it's so frustrating that so many highly accessed roads don't have cell service. I mean, if you're up in the mountains, shouldn't it be a priority for all companies to cover these random and remote areas? Because when things like this happen, what do you do if you don't have cell phone service and none of the, you know, the neighbors, you know, say Butch Atwood didn't drive by, or say none of the neighbors answered their doors? I mean, would you just freeze to death? I mean, this is such a frustrating thing to me. Darren, what are your thoughts, actually?
Well, I'm assuming that they don't do that just due to sheer volume of the people living up there. I mean, if you set up a whole cell phone tower where those mountains were and it's really only servicing three people, is it worth the money to a big company to put up a cell phone tower? So economically and from a business standpoint, maybe it isn't. I don't know. To your point, like that would be amazing. But it might not have, I mean, certainly still murders and disappearances and all that absolutely happen still to this day. You know, I mean, it's, maybe it could have been prevented in some sort of better way, or she felt like if she could call the cops or, but we're not even sure she knew, we're not even sure if she was in distress or if there was a situation under which she felt like she probably needed to call the cops preemptively. She might have felt safe.
Yeah, true.
She might
have. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
it's hard
every
to
time,
say.
Every time Tim and I are up there and we're in the area, I mean, we look at each other and we're like, can they just throw up a cell phone tower? Can they just throw one up there?
I know.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying.
But it is the White Mountain region. There's a national, it's like a national forest up there. They might just not be able to do it, to put it in the White Mountain region.
Yeah.
And it's a protected area, too.
Right.
An interesting question I wanted to ask you guys, because you talked to so many different people about this case, and you know, John and I usually just report on a case. We interview a little bit less. But every time we find someone isn't cooperative or doesn't want to talk to you or doesn't want to talk to the police, is your automatic thought, they're a suspect or they're guilty? Or has it really shifted to be like, they want to live their private life and they just don't want to be involved?
That's
Are you more
question.
Suspicious or just understanding of people's behaviors?
We point and yell witch, mostly.
Tar and feather them, right? Exactly.
Yeah. Tim points and yells witch, and I stand there and I just shake my head at them.
Yeah.
Like, disapprovingly.
Great. Thanks for helping us
out.
No.
Yeah. He hisses like.
I hiss. Yeah.
No, it's people's prerogatives. You know. It's
right.
It's understood. I think. That it just it's usually just personal preference.
Got it.
Yeah, but that's
Lance tries to talk everyone into it.
Well, I mean, that's fair. That's fair.
I shake them and I shake them and I get a phone book and I roll it. and I like yikes. I bang it on the table. And I'm like,
Lance,
it's time.
Dangerous.
It's time.
We gotta use that with Matt.
Thank you.
He's not making us those martinis fast enough. We gotta threaten him with some sort of blunt object.
We're not gonna tell him where we learned it either.
Yeah. Just start hissing and meowing at him. Maybe he'll get the picture.
No, I do want to follow up on that too, because I think that is something as a true crime podcaster now that I have definitely come to learn that not everybody who doesn't want to talk to the media is automatically guilty.
Right.
You know, we saw some of this with Mara's older sister. You know, you want to believe that maybe she knows something or whatever, but, you know, maybe she just really doesn't want to talk to anybody. And, you know, there are a lot of complications in this very tragic story, and people just sometimes want to be left alone. So that is something I can say I've grown to respect in a way that I hadn't really thought of previously. So
definitely. It's definitely shifted my perspective on it as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
And one thing that we learned pretty rapidly over the course of this is that the police don't have to release anything. We should feel lucky for anything that the police put out there in the public, because they don't have to do it. And much like the neighbors up there, they want to, you know, they live their own life.
Right.
And if they were to do something otherwise, that would be the weird part.
Right.
If the police were to do something that was out of character, like release information that podcasters were asking for, I'd probably take a step back and say, that's not very professional of the police.
Yeah, or what are they covering up to distract us away from something? For sure. That's a good point.
Right.
But with that said, the police should totally work with us as much as we want and give us as much information as they have on this case.
Right. That's a great
just
way to
tweet
put
you
that.
Directly.
Yeah, just tweet.
Just a great point by me.
Yeah, just a great point by you.
No, but I think that is a good point, because we four here on the show are curious storytellers, but also are very passionate about the things that we care about in this genre. So, you know, I think we do need to have a sense in mind.
It comes from a good place.
Yeah, it comes from a good place, but we also have to have a sense of reality when it comes to these types of things that are happening in the real world outside of our studio. So,
and, you know, one of the great things that really did happen and has happened, it is continuing to happen because of this show, is that we are hearing more about what's going on behind the scenes with law enforcement and with the cold case unit and with their movement. You know, Art is still in very close contact with them, and we chat with Maggie pretty much every day what's going on and any new thoughts. It's like, you know, Maggie and Art have not quit this case by any means.
That's amazing.
Just the opposite. They're working like crazy behind the scenes. And so it, you know, at this point, anything new that comes into us, to them, they're talking it out, they're working it out, and then potentially sending it to the cold case unit to follow up on. And you know, we've heard a few really promising things have been followed up on by the cold case unit recently. So it's nice to know that the ground is so loose, I think,
absolutely,
because of the show.
Right. And to come in right on that, John Smith has taken up the cause with change.org for the FBI to become involved again with Mora's case.
Right.
And since the show and since all the attention has been put onto the case, they're getting close to something like 14,000 or 15,000 signatures. So that's just more eyes on it. And that can't hurt. It definitely can't hurt. And, you know, who knows what the FBI will do? Who knows how they'll react? But you know what? It's more people that are passionate about it and want something to happen.
Maybe they'll join or take over the case at this point, because we do know that human blood was found in the A-frame house. Obviously, we don't know any more right now before episode 6, but maybe that's enough. And you know, that was Mr. Murray's wish, Fred Murray's wish, like a decade ago, was trying to get the FBI involved. So if this TV show can actually do that, you know, because of the DNA testing that was done on this TV show, then the FBI jumps in, you know, and finishes the job, perhaps.
That's a huge accomplishment then.
How great would that be? Yeah.
And I think, especially with what you guys are doing, and you guys are discussing a specific case, and John and I, you know, have covered like 40 cases over the 40 episodes we've had of Martinis and Murder, is that the main goal for us, especially with cases that aren't solved yet, is exposure to more people.
Yeah.
So more people can get involved. Maybe they saw something or heard something or know someone. I mean, that's really, I think, outside of educating our audience as well as ourselves, that's always the goal. I think the
for
more
sure.
that know about something, the, you know, the best disinfectant is sunlight.
All right. Fair enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
And to, I just want to shift real quick. You just said you covered 40 cases so
yeah.
far on your show. Is there a case for both of you or individually that you like truly felt uncomfortable about?
Well, I know John has a case that he's actually very personally close to, and I'm you know, I'm sure he'll say that as one of his ones. One case that I am constantly haunted by, and I would say bring up all the time, was this, I can't remember what episode number it is, but it's the Toy Box Killer. It was probably like mid-run of Martinis and Murder so far, but
18.
Episode 18, the yep. Toy Box Killer. And at first off, I do like the name, like when they have this, you know, the East Area Rapist, the Kensington yeah. Strangler. I just think it you know, it surrounds the murder with some sort of air of like, what's going to go down? And Toy
yeah.
Box, at first, to me, said something kind of like an it clown thing. It ended up not being the case.
No.
And it ended up being this guy who, when I wikied him, looked like he was in his 60s, 70s. He had this, what he called the Toy Box, which was a shed in his backyard, which was filled with a bunch of BDSM equipment. And he would take his victims back there into like a torture chamber. He involved dogs in the case. He literally tortured women
yeah.
of all ages. And it was so sick and twisted. Even saying the details were hard to read. And that one I can't get out of my head.
That was one where I remember we finished recording and it stuck with me for a few days where I was like, ugh, just the feeling of having to recant some of this stuff or recall some of this stuff was very bizarre. Yeah, for me, there was another one. It was it was episode number 3.
Yeah.
This was a case of a girl who was an actual girl, by the way. She was 16.
Yeah, we can say that.
We can say that.
Yeah.
We can confirm.
Allegedly a girl. Right.
Who unfortunately was running around with a group of girls, and these were all like high performing, like straight A students.
Yeah, and really good, well rounded students.
Yeah,
I'd say.
Like this group of girls, and basically, I forget the exact details now, but she ended up being murdered by her best friends,
mm-hmm.
and it turns out that this all happened in my town where I went to college, where I also lived for a few years after college, and I knew all of the landmarks that they talked about, and I knew some people that had heard of it, and I even had an even closer connection where a friend of mine purchased the home of one of the killers, which was kind of crazy. And so he had some details, like he said he brought in someone to kind of
sage
the air and like,
yes.
you know, rid it of its negativity. So that one's always just been interesting to me because it's so tragic, first of all, that it's a child and her best friends were the ones behind it.
Yeah,
but
these are teenage murderers. That's always going to be disturbing, I think,
definitely.
To us.
Yeah, but also that I had the connection,
yeah.
You know, from knowing everything. So those two are, I think, the ones that stuck with us, yeah.
Anything dealing with children or, I would say, younger even mm-hmm. than 21, it's just, you know, you're not even a fully fledged human being yet. You know, your mind development is still, you know, it's still processing everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're still growing. And so the idea of having the mentality at such a young age to say, I'm going to end a person's life or at least be so unaware of the consequences is just shocking to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrifying. Horrifying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The worst.
The worst.
It's the worst.
Well, thank you guys. Yeah, we really appreciate.
Yeah, thanks for ending it on such a positive note.
Yes, I know. Like,
is everyone
cheers,
crying?
Bitches.
Everyone's
yeah.
in their cars crying right now.
Exactly.
Have a great day.
That was the heaviest pause
laugh,
after anyone's
come to
ever
Martinis
spoken.
And Murder.
We should mention, though, before we you know, sign off, I want to mention that if anyone listening wants to hear you guys on our show,
yes.
that was episode number 38. So
a good age.
A good age,
a good
to
age.
Be yeah. sure.
That's my sister's age, actually, as she calls
yes.
people
oh,
kids.
Perfect.
She would call us kids. All
yes,
of us.
Yes, yes. Right. It's a woman calling us kids.
Nice.
Exactly.
Well, thank you guys so much for having us.
This was lovely. This
yeah,
was
thank you guys.
Amazing. Thank you.
This was lovely. It was like an extension of the last conversation we had, and we've learned a lot in the interim. Yeah.
We want martinis next time, though. Otherwise, we really can't keep doing this. It's not in our agreements.
No.
And you're gonna get some divas on your hand if we don't have a cocktail.
We'll let it slide this one time.
But that's it. Yeah.